Welcome to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette, brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This edition of Local Voices airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on a glance back at the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you again for tuning in to this special edition, A Glance Back, here on Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP.
Gentlemen, I give you a toast, ladies and gentlemen. May this fair land we love so well in dignity and freedom dwell. Though worlds may change and go awry, while there is still one voice to cry. Country lane, wherever there's a cottage small beside a field of grain, there'll always be an England where there's a busy street, wherever there's marching feet. Red, white, and blue, what does it mean to you? Surely you're proud, shout it out loud, Britain's away. The Empire too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England means to me. Out loud, Britain's away. The Empire too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England.
Enjoy the good old days when the world came together to fight for the good of all. This is Local Voices with historian Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Stretched out on a long white table, so cold, so sweet, so fair. Let her go, let her go, God bless her. Wherever she may be, she can look this wide world over. She'll never find another sweet man like me. Though she treated me mean and low down, somehow I didn't care. For the Lord knows she was a good girl, and I'll see her again up there. Now when I die, I want you to marry me in Edmund Clapshoe, a boxback suit and a Stetson hat. Put a $20 gold piece on my watch chain, so the boys will know I died standing pat.
Whenever skies are gray, no matter what befalls you now, there will come a brighter day. The world will sing again, the bells will ring again, and lonely hearts are meeting. Life begins anew. The sun will rise again. There'll be blue skies again, with not a cloud to hide the loveliness in view. Although your dreams have gone, just smile and carry on. There must be a darkest hour before the dawn. The world will sing again, a song of spring again, for there'll be happiness around the bend for you. And then the dreams you've dreamed will all be a darkest hour before the dawn. The world will sing again, a song of spring again, for there'll be happiness around the bend for you. And then the dreams you've dreamed will all come.
You are listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian, Jim Steele, will take us back to the age of World War II.
Today on KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back, we continue with the fourth and last historical account of how rural residents in this area eventually found the light as RAA electric lines ultimately covered the entirety of Howard County. Now, as we noted last week, by March of 1938, the first line virtually was complete, with 124 miles constructed, 152 meters set into the homes, and 210 paid members. Trunk lines were energized on May the 18th, 1938, and immediately crews began fusing the transformers. That was the last operation standing between farmers and their dream of having electricity for the first time. Power came into rural homes 2 days later, on May the 20th, 1938. But keep in mind that this 1938 milestone included only a relatively small part of the county, those homes located near the original main line. Other sections got wired in, as it was possible to do so, but in some cases this was not until the late 1940s or even as late as 1950. Nonetheless, between May 1938 and 1945, our county's RAA membership grew from 161 to 403 members. So today, as we continue this narrative, we'll endeavor to tell the rest of the story of how rural Howard County residents ultimately became fully electrified. This in spite of the Depression, World War II, and political maneuvering. For example, board members of Howard Electric forged ahead in the wake of efforts by RAA officials in Washington who pushed for consolidation of projects in three counties, Boone, Callaway, and Howard. Ultimately, all three counties rejected the proposal, so Howard Electric had met its first test and had survived. Now, the late Louise Couts noted in a 2002 news account by this writer that the first appliances purchased by most farm wives after the power was turned on were, well, you can guess it, a washing machine, refrigerator, and an electric iron. Howard Electric soon established a permanent organization, this under the direction of a board of directors, with a staff of clerical and maintenance workers supervised by a manager. His name was Thomas Biswald. Now, he'd been elected on a temporary basis in 1937, ultimately became the permanent manager until returning to full-time farming in 1944. Biswell was succeeded by J.C. Omer of New London, Missouri. For the first 10 years of Howard Electric's operation, many of the farm homes were wired by a Fayette electrician. Jordan Cooper was his name. Original Howard County offices were located, as we told you earlier, in the courthouse, followed later by a move to larger quarters on the second floor of the Commercial Trust Company building. In 1956, the co-op would occupy its own building. It was a former poultry processing facility at the southeast corner of Elm and Church in Fayette, and this is still remembered by many older residents of this area. Now, as we noted last week, wartime priorities following the attack on Pearl Harbor caused installation of wiring on the farm homes to come to a halt almost immediately. This particularly was due to copper shortages. Any project 40% complete as of December 5th, 1941, could be completed. But by 3 months later, all REA line work had been halted, regardless of status. Co-op employees during the war years were only four in number. Two linemen, an office girl, and the manager. Because of the need to ration tires and gasoline, Howard Electric in 1942 initiated the practice of having members mail in their meter readings. Now, in the earlier days, co-op personnel had read the meters themselves. Now, two significant developments came at war's end in 1945. The co-op secured its first line truck. Before that, employees used their own trucks and got mileage reimbursed. And also, it gets approval, the co-op gets approval, for a $265,000 REA loan. In those early post-war years, Howard Electric and other co-ops often faced resistance from private utilities, which had refused to serve local residents or rural residents in the first place. Now, these were known as spite lines, and they were built by private or municipal power companies. It was a practice called cherry picking in order to serve more profitable, densely populated areas or areas with larger loads. As you might expect, this hurt the co-op's sustainability and their efforts to expand with new customers after the war. Our highly regarded manager, J.C. Omer, would serve from 1944 to 1958, a 14-year streak, which would be the longest in Howard Electric's history until Richard Fowler passed this mark in the year 2005, and who continues to serve today. Now, Mr. Omer became a noted leader in the statewide group, now known as the Association of Missouri Electric Cooperatives. He had led efforts in 1948 to establish a safety and job training program for the association, and in that year it was reported that Missouri farms, 1948 now, were now 50% electrified. By the time of Howard County's annual meeting in 1950, it was reported here that our cooperative had achieved complete area coverage with 1,564 members. By 1954, this had grown to 1,700 members and 600 miles of line around the county. Average household energy use increased fivefold between 1938 and 1954 as the load on rural lines grew with the use of electricity by members. Now, of course, this increased from simple electric lights to ranges, water heaters, farm equipment, and other modern appliances. Sometimes in those growing years, a small number of farms would have to be cut off for an hour or so due to overloads. As we reported earlier, in Fayette's municipal power plant had furnished power for 11 years, beginning in 1938. But by 1949, Howard Electric joined with four other mid-Missouri co-ops to form the Jefferson City-based Central Electric Cooperative. Later, three more systems joined, and it became Mid-State 8 Electric Co-ops. But nonetheless, there were still some problems coming from private power companies, with newspaper ads claiming that co-ops building their own power plants were virtually, in their words, undermining the American way of life. Private companies brought lawsuits in the courts, and it wasn't until 1955 that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that electric co-ops had the right to borrow money from the government to build generators and transmission facilities. On August 15, 1954, the Central Electric Cooperative dedicated a new power generating plant at Chamoy, this following a running battle with private power companies which sought to block construction. It was a new day in rural electrification, as Howard County now would be in control of its own destiny, this after overcoming a number of roadblocks. Now, once the plant came online, the co-op would take its power from Chamoy instead of the Fayette Municipal Plant. A substation was added in Yates, that's in the northern part of Howard County. This improved reliability. By 1959, our cooperative had 528 miles of line serving 1,678 customers, and after more than 20 years in business, had never increased rates, absorbing rising costs year after year. The 1960s were good years, with the Kennedy administration providing a more comfortable climate for co-ops than had the Eisenhower administration. Also, many new electrical appliances and devices had come into widespread use. Mercury vapor lamps, for example, in addition to electrical farming equipment, such as heat lamps for farrow pigs, grain dryers, and so forth. As power needs increased, electricity for the various regional transmission groups ultimately became supplied by a new concept, the Associated Electric Cooperative, which would build coal-fired plants at Thomas Hill and New Madrid. But with cheap rates in the 1960s, rural residents continued to jump on the bandwagon by using electricity in multiple ways, including electric heat. However, the era of cheap rates was about to end. Expenses associated with adding new generating equipment and other factors such as pollution control caused the rates to soar. In 1975, the RAA Howard Electric Co-op vacated its Church Street location for a new site north of Fayette on Highway 5240 using land that had been purchased back in 1961. This original 1975 building has had, as you probably know, several expansions and upgrades over the years. Our local co-op managed to weather the farm crisis of the 1980s, what saw many farm foreclosures in Howard County and elsewhere. The existence of Howard County as a strictly local entity was again threatened. In 1981, a proposal to merge operations with Boone Electric is proposed. However, ultimately, our co-op members voted down the merger. The early and mid-1980s were rough years for the co-op because of rate increases and the need to deal with storms and bad weather, including the worst ice storm in the organization's history. That was in 1985. Nonetheless, Howard Electric saw it through. By 1986, the co-op had enough income to exceed expenses, and a peak alert program was established. In the late 1980s, Howard Electric again fought off a territory grab in Randolph County, this by Union Electric. By 1988, members could subscribe to rural television programming, with 35 channels available, and 2 years later, a branch office in Moberly was opened to serve members of Howard, Boone, and Macon Electric Cooperatives. Finally, in 1990, Richard Fowler becomes the 11th manager of the Howard Electric Cooperative and continues in that role today, the longest tenure in the co-op's history. Now, as a final side note, today is President's Day. So, as we conclude our look back at the history of rural electricity in Howard County, it's entirely appropriate to salute the presidential hero who spearheaded the nationwide effort to bring the light to those living in rural areas. Now, as late as the mid-1930s, 9 out of 10 rural homes were without electric service. The farmer milked his cows by hand in the dim light of a kerosene lantern. His wife was a slave to the woods range and the washboard. The unavailability of electricity in rural areas kept their economics entirely and exclusively dependent on agriculture. Factories and businesses, of course, preferred to locate in cities where electric power was easily acquired. For many years, power companies ignored the rural areas of the nation. The first official action of the federal government, pointing the way to the present rural electrification program, came with FDR's advocacy of the Tennessee Valley Authority, better known as the TVA. That act was passed in May of 1933. The idea of providing federal assistance to accomplish rural electrification had gained ground rapidly when President Roosevelt took office in 1933. On May the 11th, 1935, FDR signed Executive Order Number 7037, establishing the Rural Electrification Administration, better known as RAA. But it was not not until a year later that the Rural Electrification Act was passed by Congress, and this led the program that the REA and got underway. Now, within months, it was evident that two REA officials that established investor-owned utilities were not interested in using federal loan funds to serve sparsely populated rural areas. But loan applications from farmer-based cooperatives, such as here in Howard County, poured in. And the REA soon realized electric cooperatives would be the entities to make rural electrification a reality. In 1937, the REA drafted the Electric Cooperative Cooperation Act as a model law that states could adopt to enable the formation and operation of not-for-profit consumer-owned electric cooperatives. Within 4 years following the close of World War II, the number of rural electric systems in operation doubled. The number of consumers connected more than tripled, and the miles of energized line grew more than fivefold. By 1953, more than 90% of U.S. farms had electricity. Today, about 99% of the nation's farms have electric service. Most rural electrification is the product of locally owned rural electric cooperatives, such as ours, that got their start by borrowing funds from REA to build lines and provide service on a not-for-profit basis. REA now is called the Rural Utility Service, and it's part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. False claims that electric cooperatives were hoarding copper wire during World War II brought co-op leaders from different states together in that year to defend themselves. As a result, in 1942, America's electric cooperatives formed the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, this to provide a unified voice for co-ops and to represent their interest in Washington, D.C. Today, it represents more than 900 consumer-owned, not-for-profit electric co-ops, plus public power districts and public utility districts in the United States. The Arlington, Virginia-based National Service Organization oversees co-op employee benefit plans, carries out federal government relations, such as lobbying, conducts management and director training, and spearheads communication advocacy and public relations initiatives. In addition, it coordinates national and regional conferences and seminars, offering member cooperatives advice on tax, legal, environmental, and engineering matters. And it performs economic and technical research as well. And so on this President's Day, we remember that it all began with the progressive thinking of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. For KPIP Local Voices, A Glance Back, this is Jim Steele reporting.
That was our glance back in time with Jim Steele, president of the Boone Slick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
You're in love. Your heart's a-fluttering all day long. You only start it 'cause you're poor tongue. Just will not out of the way. What?
you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. Kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace. He has no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets caught.
But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. New kind of jumped up slippery fish, and all the monkeys aren't in the zoo.
Every day you meet quite a few.
So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star.
Taking a step back in time with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
The fire brigade out to the littest, uppest scene you ever saw. Thank you.
Taking a Step Back in Time with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Seven, that's the time we that takes me back. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gotta take that sentimental journey. Sentimental journey home. Sentimental journey.
Listen as past and present collide with Local Voices, Monday edition from noon to 4 p.m. on 94.7 KPIP.
The torch I carry is handsome. It's worth its heartache in ransom. And when the twilight steals, I know how the lady in the harbor feels. When I want rain, I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love is gone, can't pull myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Friends ask me out, I tell them I'm busy. I must get a new alibi. I stay at home and ask myself, who is he? Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Dry little teardrops, my little teardrops, hanging on a string of dreams. Fly little memories, my little memories, remind her of our crazy schemes. Somebody said, just forget about her. So I gave that treatment a try. Strangely enough, I got along without her. Then one day she passed me right by. Oh, well, I guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. in other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
up each morning bright and early to wake up all the neighborhood, to bring to every boy and girlie his happy serenade on wood. Hear him picking out a melody, peck, peck, pecking at the same old tree. He's as happy as a bumblebee all day long. To serenade your lady, just find a tree that's shady. And when you hear that tick-a-tick-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick, sing right along. Come on and try his rhythm, and let your hearts beat with him. Just listen to that tick-a-tick-tick-tick-a-tick-tick, happy little woodpecker song.
Just listen to that tick-a-tick-tick-tick.